glad you're here. I don't know how I got to be up here to speak first. Had lunch with Sam a few weeks ago, and he was like, hey, can you talk about this? We were having conversations like, sure, I don't know that I have all the answers or I have any answers, but it's what I'm walking through just in my church and my life, so I can tell you what I've experienced, and so I'm going to give that up front. Like, I don't have all the answers. I'm not expecting you to walk away and be like, oh man, he told me exactly what to do, because if you have that, take good notes and give them back to me, all right? So I would really appreciate that. It'd be helpful. So my name's Andrew Floyd. I'm the senior pastor at First Baptist Lake St. Louis. I have been there for a year and a half now. My family and I moved from Florida most recently. We were there 7 years. I've been in ministry for over 20 years. I served in several different churches in the role of youth pastor and next-gen pastor. And so I had the opportunity to experience different settings in churches and different size churches, and so I got a lot of different experiences along the way. A couple years ago, felt like God was calling me to step out of next-gen student ministry into a senior pastor role for the purpose of impacting families over the course of the church, and so felt like that's where God was opening doors and led us to Missouri, and so my wife and I have been married for 14 years now. Our kids, Zach and Zoe, have a new middle schooler and a fourth grader, and so they've enjoyed the Missouri and having seasons and seeing snow. So they got to experience that for the first time this past year. So that's a little bit about myself. And again, I'm not sure that I'm to have all the answers when it comes to this, but one of the conversations Sam and I were just talking about, some of the books I was reading, is I was able to serve in some churches where we had over 1,000 people who were attending, and that's really great. And it was a completely different staff experience from the first church I served in, had the chance to preach in, where there were 50 people in the church. And so that is a wide range of what to expect and what to experience when you're on staff and to work with people. And so most recently, I came from a church of about 600-700 people on a Wednesday or Sunday morning. And so the idea of, all right, stepping into a church where we're about 200, 220 to 250 on a Sunday morning, how does that have to change in my leadership along the way and working with people and with the dynamics of the church? And so every church is different. Every church looks different, and there is not a right way to do it, but there are some things that along the way I felt like picked up. And so my wife said I was not supposed to say this, but she's not here. So I will tell you this. Contrary to what your wife has told you, size does matter, all right? But that does not mean bigger is better, all right? For example, so I've got some pictures to help demonstrate it. When it comes to the vehicles you drive, size does matter when the vehicles you drive. If you've ever driven, I've never driven one, a VW Beetle Bug, it whips into a parking spot really quickly, right? There is a big difference the way you drive that and you drive a Ram 350 Dodge pickup truck, all right? They do not drive the same. If you've ever driven a big truck and it has a trailer with it, you do not drive it the same way. Like, there are some things that you should know when you drive a trailer that you don't drive the same way without. I drove a Jeep Wrangler for a lot of years. I was really sad I had to give it up when we moved to Missouri because I didn't think it would actually make it to Missouri. It was 20 years old, and so I couldn't bring it with me, but I could fly around the parking lot really quickly. But I also knew when I pulled in a parking space, it was really easy because it was short. It was easy to get in. But I also knew when I drove my Jeep Wrangler that if I was not careful taking some of those turns, it was more likely to flip over. It had those things that go along with it. If you're going to drive a bus, you have to have a special license to drive a bus. You have to get credentialed, certified, and so they are not the same experience. If you drive a Tesla truck, it's ugly, all right? That's the only thing I had with that. So I just wanted to put a picture and just say, don't do that. But there's things that we do along the way that we just have to know that there is a difference in those things. And so bigger is not necessarily better, but there are differences. And so just being aware of those differences is really, really helpful. And so I would just encourage you as you walk through your church's stage of life, and that's what it is usually a stage of life. How do you recognize where you're at and recognize the differences and just be aware of those things as they come along? So I found this, and I know there are lots of different studies and lots of different definitions of what are church sizes that are out there. This was from worshipleaders.com from last year, so it was pretty current, up to date. It just said that from small churches, their definition of small churches was attendance of 0 to 99, that 59% of our churches in the United States are made up of that. Of medium-sized churches and medium-small churches is 100 to 499. The percentage of that is 35% of churches. Medium-sized churches, 500 to 999. Now, I say 500 to 999. You probably think, well, that's a really large church for most of us. That would be a large church. In the overall scheme of things, they defined it as medium, but that's only 4%. And so you see from medium and below, you've got about 95% of all of our churches in the United States. So I am guessing most of us are in churches that are medium or smaller in here. We're probably not in the large church or mega church or super mega church. Super mega church being 0.01%. So you could probably list, there are 50 super mega churches in the United States. So that's not really a realistic place that we are at. And so when I'm talking about church size dynamics, we're really looking at the medium, small churches. And how do we recognize that and recognize those differences? Because there is a difference between 50 people in attendance on Sunday and 300 or 400 in attendance on Sunday. And so just recognizing there is a difference in the way we lead. And so this was just a great picture of those different dynamics that were there as available. So when it goes back to the idea of what is size and how does size matter, I do think it is important to recognize that. But size is something that we should not necessarily strive for in its purpose itself. And so in Judges chapter 7, you're probably familiar with the story. It's somewhat readable there. I didn't know what it would look like on screen. So in Judges chapter 7, you're probably familiar with the story of Gideon. Gideon was a judge in the book of Judges, and God came to him and said, I want you to defeat the Midianites and go and get your army. And he said, all right, look at all these people I brought for you, God. And God said, that's too many people. Ask the people who will volunteer to go and who will be willing to fight. And God said, and Moses, or Gideon went and said, okay, yes, absolutely, okay, do that. And they got down to like 10,000 people. And God said, that's still too many people. And God said, all right, take them down to the water and have them drink. And that's what's here on the scene. See how they drink. The ones that drink this manner, who lap it up and who use their hands, those are the ones I want you to fight. And so it ends up in Gideon chapter 7, or Judges chapter 7, Gideon gets down to 300 men to fight his battle. Now, if you and I were choosing our church size and we went to God and said, God, all right, I want a church size of 10,000 people, we would be like, oh, that's great. God's like, I need you to have a smaller church. I need you to do what you're going to do with this. And so when we think of size, it's one of those cases where bigger is not better. And God, because you read the story, you know what happens here. In the end, God uses a smaller army so that he gets all the credit. And so that's the idea of when we look at our churches, it is not about what we want or what we're desiring. It's not trying to get bigger for the sake of being better. It's being effective with what God has given us because so that God gets the glory. Galatians chapter 6 says this, let each person examine his own work, and then he can take pride in himself alone and not compare himself with someone else. And so our goal is not to compare our church size to the church size next to us and what are they running versus what we're running. And I know that's, when you go to a conference, that's usually one of those questions you get asked really quick, like, so how many are you running? How many people you got? Like, that's never been one of my focuses in ministry, to say, all right, I'm not concerned with how many we have. But there is a realization that comes. Knowing how many you have is important to know how you lead the church. You can't lead a church of 50 the same way you would lead a church of 200. And so it's just one of those things, how do we walk through that and what does that look like in that? And so one of the things that just I want to talk a little bit about, and I am open to hearing maybe some of your experiences as well, your input, your feedback, but some of those differences in sizes that we have when you look at a church of 50 to 500, the differences we see there is, one of those things is a difference in complexity. You get more complex the more people you have. People are complex. And so you add more people, you're just adding more complexity. And so it's one of those things that a lot of times when we have a church of 50 and we struggle with those difficult people, that they don't go away when the church gets bigger. The more difficult people you have in a small church, you're going to have more difficult people in a larger church. I was reading a book, it's called Leadership Pains by Sam Chan. He was talking about in that book that God uses sometimes smaller churches to refine us, get us ready maybe for the next step in our life, and then whatever that looks like. And if a church has 10 problem people and you have 100 people, so 10%, you go to a larger church, that percentage doesn't change. So your 10% problem people are still going to be 10%. You just have more of them to a larger church. And so that complexity, people, difficulties, they come along with that. Lay staff responsibilities, those change over time. So in a smaller church, show of hands. Small. Who would consider himself in a small church? Go back here. Look at that. Small church. Who would consider themselves a small church? All right. Who would consider himself in a medium-small church? That's where we're at. Any medium church? Medium church right there, that threshold? Anybody who's larger? I'll just ask. Okay. All right. So we're all in that medium-small. So there's a difference in the way we'd handle that. The lay staff responsibilities in a small church, typically the pastor is the one who visits everybody. The pastor is the one who handles all of the minute detail. He's the one who handles all the day-to-day activities, those things like that. As the church grows, the pastor has to become almost more hands-off. He can't do every single task. He has to pass on responsibility. The laity, that sometimes, and every church is different, looks different, sometimes that the hospital visitation begins to pass on to the deacons or to another group. The benevolence, the pastor no longer handles benevolence. Now that goes to a benevolence committee or whatever structure you have in place. And so you begin to pass those things off. You almost move from more of that shepherd, that caretaker, the one who does everything, to being the one who manages the shepherds. And so it's a transition that happens over time. I served at a church, and one of my mentors and a great friend of mine, the joke was on staff, if he visited you in the hospital, you had to be dying. Because he did not make hospital visits on a regular basis. The church, over 1,000 people, he just could not be in the hospital because there were literally 7-8 hospital visits every single day. So that if he got to the point where he was only doing hospital visits, he would never be preparing to preach. He would not be leading the church well. And so there was designated staff members and passed along amongst the staff members to visit the hospital in that case. And so you did not want the pastor to visit you in the hospital. That was not a good sign. It probably meant things were not going well for you. For most of us, that just doesn't even cross our mind. Like, the idea that we would not go to the hospital, that our people would be offended of, oh man, you wouldn't show up to the hospital for me? And so a lot of times, even our churches, when they think about size and size dynamics, they can easily say we want something without meaning what they want. Best example I have of that is when I came to First Baptist Lake St. Louis, I asked the search committee, what would you consider to be successful after 1 year of me being here? And one of the search committee members looked at me in the eye and said, if you baptize 300 people, we average around 200 people on Sunday morning. I said, okay, can I pause for a second? Because if we baptize 300 people, this church would not look like the church it is today. Like, one, we don't have any systems in place. We're not prepared. We wouldn't be able to handle in our... We could probably stuff them in our sanctuary, to be honest. We wouldn't have parking for them. We wouldn't know what to do with them. We wouldn't have small group Sunday school space for them. Like, do you know how many problems that would be? And you would not be who you are as a greeter and a welcomer. Like, everything about our church would be completely different. So you're telling me you want a completely different church. Oh, no. I want the same. Our people want the same church. They say they want growth, but it's not always what they mean. So it's one of those things that it changes. There's different size dynamics that go along with it. Quality of production. One of the benefits of being in a smaller church is that we don't have to be perfect all the time. The larger you get at a church, the more people come in expecting your worship service to be almost a production. The screen's flickering on and off in here earlier. That would be something in church that I have no problem with it happening once. But if I did that, my worship leader's sitting in here, I'm going to go to him and we're going to have a conversation after that Sunday when it happens and be like, okay, what do we need to do to fix that so it doesn't happen again? And we have to fix that. Like, I don't care what it is. What is the problem? How do we fix that? In a smaller church of 50 or 60 people, I can tell you what's going to happen. Oh, that's just Bill back there running everything. It's okay. It's no big deal. It's perfectly fine. We'll be okay with that. And it's allowed to happen, and it will happen. So there's a changing in production quality versus what is there and what's allowed. And that's not a right or wrong. It's just what it is. And so it's recognizing those differences and learning to be okay with those things. Again, I came from a larger church to where I'm at now, and there are things that we did there where I'm like, oh, I can't do that. And I'm like, oh, the only person that's a big deal to is to me. If this is the only thing that's a big deal, then I don't have to worry about that. Like the quality of the audio on the video production that we're doing, okay, nobody else cares about that. Okay, we'll be fine. It's good, but can we improve it? Sure. Is there things we could do make it? Absolutely. But if that's if I'm the only person who's looking at and worried about that, if our staff's the only one who's looking at and worried about that, then maybe it's not something we have to fix right now. And so just learning where your church is a big helpful in that. And so that quality of production. Communication, it's almost an oxymoron in what it is of communication, but as your church grows, you have to be more intentional with your communication. You have to be more specific. The announcements from the stage, the larger a church, just aren't as effective anymore. We've all been in the church, or maybe you haven't. I've been in the church where on Sunday morning, Nana is going to get up on stage, and she's going to get the microphone, and she's going to talk for 5 or 10 minutes, and she's going to look you in the eye and say, well, you haven't signed up for the potluck yet. I need you to sign up for the potluck. And I'm going to bring you a list right after and sign up. Like, I've been in that church where they've said, like, you're going to do that. That doesn't work when your church gets to 100 to 200 to 300 people. You can't stand up on stage and be like, hey, if you haven't signed up for the potluck yet, you need to do that now. Come and see Jim. Jim, sign up with Jim. Who's Jim? In a church of 50, everybody knows Jim. Church of 100, 200, 300, 500, which Jim? Jim is sitting in the back, or Jim's sitting over there, or where is that? You have to be a lot more intentional in your communication. And so it's just working through those processes, those systems, to help you understand what that looks like. And so, again, it's not a right or wrong. Sometimes it's better, and some people are looking and desire to have that. I just want to know who Jim is, and I can go sign up with Jim. And so it's a balancing of those tensions, really, is what it is, and the size dynamics in it. Communication has to change. Openness to change. There's an openness to change the larger a church gets, usually. And if we're honest, the reason that is because the larger a church is, the more it has had to change over time. And so it is recognized as seeing those changes. I worked with students for 20-plus years, and I will stand on this. The most resistant group to change is students. It's not senior adults. It's students, because students have not experienced a lot of change in their life. And the change they have, they always freak out about. When you get to work with senior adults, they've experienced change. For the most part, when they see change coming, they see it, they know, okay, it's going to work out in the end. I don't like it. I don't agree with it, but I know it's going to be okay. In the end, it's just going to all work out. And so they are willing to try change a lot more than even students. But a church that has been through a lot of change is open to more change because they've seen it over and over again. So a larger church is going to be more open to that. A smaller church, you have to walk through change slowly. You have to be very careful. You have to make sure that you walk through the right processes. It's all a part of that that goes along with it. The larger a church gets, and this, again, doesn't make sense, but it goes along with it. The larger a church gets, the more you are, and I'm going to say okay, but I don't mean okay, you're okay with losing members. A larger church loses. There are large churches in our community, our area, who probably lost more members than we have attending on a Sunday morning, if we're honest. And they have to learn to balance what that is, looks like. That, hey, we are a church, that this is what we're doing, and we have to be okay with people who are not on the same page as us. They're not bad people. They're not Christian, but this is who we are, and this is what our purpose is, and they are very specific about that. And so refining that vision, that purpose piece for larger churches is very particular. And there are some people who say, I don't like that. And the larger churches are usually churches who say, okay, well, that's who we are. We would love for you to worship with us, but if that's not what you want, we would let you worship with somebody else too. We would invite you to go worship there. So there is an openness to losing members that comes with the larger you get. Because a church of 500 that loses 5 people doesn't really know they lose 5 people. A church of 50 that loses 5 people, you've just lost 10% of your attendance on a Sunday morning. It makes a big difference. And everybody in your church of 50 is going to be looking around saying, well, they left. What's wrong? What's going on? What do we need to change to get them back? And it's just a difference of what it is. And so those size dynamics plays a part into that as well. One more here I'll give and then move on. But I would say one of the big changes, size dynamics that change along the way, is that the bigger you get, the more intentional you have to be to become smaller. You have to be intentional with that. The larger the church it is, the easier it is for somebody to slip into the back and feel like they are just attending a concert or a worship experience without having community. And so large churches that serve well have to be really intentional about having small groups, Sunday school classes, an opportunity for places to get for places for people to get plugged in a smaller, intimate setting where people can know who they are, so they can know when they're missing. And so that's easy to say, but that's what small churches do really well. I promise you, if your church is 50 people and you have a family show up on a Sunday morning, everybody knows that you had guests there on Sunday morning. In a church, we're about 200, so I'll say, in a church of our size, we have new people every single week, but our church doesn't know it. And so I have to make sure I remind people over and over again, hey, we have new people here who are here for the very first time this Sunday, and so we have to be intentional of looking for them, connecting them, getting them plugged in, because people will blend in naturally. And so there is an opportunity for us to get smaller if we're going to be bigger churches. So again, there's not a this is better, it's just this is a reality of those different dynamics. And so in the conversation Sam and I had, said these are just some of the things I'm working through. Like, I'm trying to figure out where we are and where we're going and where we're trying to be and what does that look like. And so for me, what I really came with that was helpful for me was these three steps. The first step is you have to understand who you are. Understand who you are, who God has designed you to be, because I don't think every person is made equal. I think we're all valuable, but we're not made equal. God has given us different gifts, different giftings, different abilities, and we have to lean into that. When I felt called to ministry, I wanted nothing to do with ministry when I started off in my life. I thought I was going to be a lawyer. When I was in high school, I did mock trial. And then I realized I had to get up and speak in front of people. And I said, I don't want to do that. Yes, the irony will sink in later. It's all right. So I said, you know what? I'm going to be an engineer. I spent a semester in college doing that and realized I don't want to sit behind a computer all day. A couple years later, I switched my major to be a forestry major so I could work with trees. Didn't have to work with people, got to work outdoors. And so about that time, as I was beginning my forestry major, felt like God was calling me into ministry because I'd been serving as an intern at my home church for about a year at that time. Ended up serving there 3.5 years, and through that process, I felt like God was calling me into ministry, not because I was like every other pastor I saw. Like, I don't know about you, but the pastor I grew up under, when I think of God's voice, I hear his voice, all right? Because he had that deep, booming voice, and I was like, I can never be that. That is not who I am. And through the process of just serving on staff, being an intern, getting experience in ministry, I feel like God's saying to me, like, I have not created you to be Dr. Sims. I've not created you to be him. I've created you to be you. I don't need you to be like him. I need you to be who you are and to be who I've created you to be. And I was not I am still not the most outgoing person. I am not an extrovert by nature. I'm not the person who's going to walk up to a stranger and be like, hey, can I tell you about Jesus? That's not my natural gifting. It takes effort, it takes work, and we should all work on that, be more evangelistic, absolutely, but it's not where my natural skill set is. I would much rather sit behind a computer screen. I would much rather work with a spreadsheet. I would much rather use what God has given to me and do that. That doesn't mean that I can't use what God has equipped me to be who I am, to do what he wants me to do. And so knowing who I am, knowing how I'm equipped matters a lot. There's a book that just came out called Desizing the Church by Carl Vatters. And he was a pastor who was at a small church, and his church grew exponentially, and then it crashed completely and became a small church again. And he walks through that process, and he talks about it a lot in his book, and I haven't finished reading it, but it talks about this idea of, hey, every pastor has, and he says it this way, it's kind of a way to say it, every pastor has a number on their back where they are ideal at, where they really benefit at. He says, look, after experiencing serving in a small church that went to become a large church and back to a small church, I am most well equipped to be a small church pastor. I don't ever want to be a pastor of a church over 200 people. Like, if our church gets to that point, then that's not where I need to be at. And so he said, I have a number on my back. This is my sweet spot of where God has made me. And so understanding who you are plays a big role of that. Knowing what your purpose is a key part of knowing how God designed you. You've probably all heard the story of Netflix offering to buy Blockbuster many years ago. Blockbuster was selling videos, going great, and Netflix came to them and said, hey, would you be willing to buy us? And Blockbuster's like, no, we're not interested in that. The problem was Blockbuster forgot what their purpose was. They thought their purpose was to sell videos, not to provide entertainment. And so Blockbuster turned Netflix down, said, we don't want to buy you. We're going to do our own thing. A few years later, Blockbuster's struggling. They come back to Netflix like, can you buy us? So we have Netflix, this behemoth that it is now today, can't stream a fight between Mike Tyson and Jake Paul, but the behemoth that it is, that is still existence, and Blockbuster you can't find anymore because they forgot their purpose. They thought their purpose was just to sell videos. Their purpose was to provide entertainment. And so knowing your purpose matters. Go back to the cars and the size difference matters. I think the way that cars are being made, the transition is happening. If cars are not careful today, they're going to forget what their purpose is, and that's going to change probably in our culture over the next couple years. I was in Scottsdale, Arizona a couple years ago for spring break. My sister-in-law lived there, and we were visiting her, and we were at the playground one day, and I noticed this car, this minivan, and it had stuff all over it. And I was like, it's really odd that this car with what looks like cameras is parked next to a kid's playground. What is this? And it was there for several days. And so I pulled my phone out and I Googled it, and it had the words on it, Waymo. All right? You know what that is because you're from around here and I was far away. Had no idea. So I looked it up. Waymo is Google's self-driving taxi car. And Scottsdale, Arizona was the first place where it was in service to be a self-driving car. What Waymo is recognized is that cars' purpose is to get people from place A to place B to transport people and not just do it because it's always been done that way. I don't know about you, but that really piqued my interest. So I decided that I need to figure out how I can get this. And so you download the Waymo app and you can actually call this self-driving car to pick you up along the side of the street. So I was with my wife and kids. I was like, I'm going to go pick us up lunch. Y'all don't get to go with me because if this car crashes, I don't know what's going to happen to us. So I pull out the app, I summon this taxi to me. It says, you need to walk 500 feet down the street and walk there. And I literally stood there and watched this car circle the street like two times trying to figure out where I was, but then pull up and then just open the door for me. I got in this car not knowing what was going to happen. Didn't let me in the front seat. I had to get in the back seat. It was during COVID was when it was, so it was 2020. Gives you a case for it. So back seat of this car, nobody's in the front seat, and we take off down the road. It was about the point when we came up on the interstate that I thought, this may not be a great idea. It did not get on the interstate, thankfully. It kept the speed limit like 45 the whole way, but it took me all the way to Canes. So I was able to pick up lunch, get to my Canes, and come back home. It was the craziest experience. But since that day, I know Waymo has expanded its services out to San Francisco and in other cities in California. There is going to be a day and a point in our society, I think, before I pass away, I believe, where cars are not going to need drivers anymore. But if cars continue to build what they're building, if there's not a disruption, they forget their purpose, it's going to change quickly. And purpose matters. So when you think about purpose, what is you trying to accomplish? What has God called you to do? And so purpose makes a big difference. So what is your purpose? The second thing we have to understand is, what is your church? What is your church trying to be? Who is your church desiring to be? And understanding who that is important. So you've all heard it said before, and I know it's just cliches, but we are called to live as a missionary in our community. We are called to be as a missionary of our church. When a missionary goes to a new community, a new place, what they are tasked with is, who is this people I'm reaching? What is this people about? What are they trying to accomplish? What are they trying to do? As pastors of churches, that's really what we should be doing each and every day, is understanding who we are, but who is our church? Who is our church trying to become? Who is our church desiring to be? What is our church trying to accomplish, and trying to mesh and meet our needs together? And so we should live as a missionary, understanding our church's desires and what God's called our church to be. And not every church is the same. Not every church is going to be doing the exact same things, and that's a good thing. If all of our churches look the exact same, we would be in competition with one another. We're not in competition with one another. What Pastor Bob said a little while ago, like, we are not succeeding at someone else's failure. We are all still reaching a community for lost people. Like, we are trying to reach people who don't know Jesus. And that should be our goal. There are plenty of lost people in our area to continue to reach out and not affect anybody else. When Micah plants a church in Newtown, it's not taking away from St. Charles or from Lake St. Louis. When Waypoint plants a campus out here in Wentzville, it's not taking away from my church people. They're reaching lost people. They're reaching people who don't know Jesus. And so when we build more churches, that's a really good thing. And so I think we have to understand that. What is our church? How is our church unique? My church is not going to be the same as your church or the church down the street. Who are we, and how can we be the best church that we are supposed to be? So we are to live as missionaries and understand that purpose. And finally, we're just to say, ask God, what is next? What are you calling us to be? Our goal is not to be bigger. Our goal is to be healthy. And I think healthy churches make a bigger impact than bigger churches. And so whatever size church you are, if it's a church of 50 or a church of 500, when we turn into what God wants us to do, when we're healthy, we can make an impact no matter what size we are. You look around the church today and you see, man, all these shoeboxes that are going to go out across the world. I think that's amazing. I think that's great. My church, we only packed 100, but we're doing other things. Like, what is healthy for us is not necessarily healthy here. And what is healthy here is not necessarily healthy for us. How do we become the best version of who we are called to be? And so understanding that is really how we handle the church dynamics and the politics that come along with it, the organization that we are. Are you structured by who leads the church? Is it staff-led, or is it led by committees? Is it led by the deacons? Is it led by congregational vote? Like, all of those things that, as autonomous churches, I am thankful that we are. Who leads the church? Clarifying that makes a difference. Helping your church understand how it's different is a key aspect of what you are called to do in leading the church, to be the shepherd of the church, to help them understand who are we supposed to be. And so understand who you are, understand where the church is, and then ask God what is next so that we can be healthy. Three just quick points to close with kind of here. Got five more minutes, right, Sam? Okay. All right. If you've ever read the book Gaining by Losing by J.D. Greer, it's a great book. One of the things he says in there, it's always stuck out to me, is sending capacity is greater than seating capacity. If we are going to be a healthy church and a good healthy church, our size doesn't matter because we're usually limited by three things in a church: seating capacity, parking spaces, and bathrooms. Those are the things that limit us in having people in our building. If we have multiple services, or we are planning churches, if we're sending out churches, like, those things help us continue to grow and have an impact and continue to be healthy without limiting the impact we can have in just one building. And so that is a great way for us to continue to grow, is by being healthy in size dynamic, is sending out instead of just measuring, do we have more people in our church? Again, I think for the average church person, what they look at for health on a Sunday morning is, well, how many people do we have here? That should not be our concern. Our size and who we have on a Sunday morning is not what God defines as a healthy church. I think what God defines as a healthy church is, are we sending people out? Are we sending capacity? I would say our leadership development is greater than leadership discovery, that we should be building up leaders within our church. If you have multiple staff on your church, you've probably been through a staff search process. And you probably hate it as much as I do. It is a draining process to me because it's an expensive process. Even if you don't farm it out and have another company do it for you, if you do it internally, it costs you money. It costs you money to have somebody come in and visit your church and to promote your church and to do the thing. There is a lot of expense that goes into it. And then the lost income you have because you don't have a staff position that's not filled, and all the things that go along with that, the holes that are there, people are like, well, I'm not going to attend their church, they get the children's director, or I'm not going to attend because they don't have a worship leader. You have to deal with all those things, like the cost there. But if we were developing leaders within our church instead of going out and seeking and trying to discover leaders, I think we would be a much healthier church. And that church of 50 or 500, I think God has put the leaders in our church for our church to be who he needs it to be. And so when we think about leadership development, we don't have to necessarily go out and find the greatest student pastor in the world to lead our student ministry. God's placed somebody in our churches to be our student leader. And we need to develop them and to work beside them. That the whole Paul, Barnabas, Timothy, I think our Timothys are right there in our church. We don't have to go looking for them. Like, they are there. God has placed them there. And even if our church only has 50 people, then one of those 50 is who God's placed there for that purpose. And so developing is a really key aspect of that. And then finally, I'll say practicing is greater than preaching. I think preaching is a really high caliber thing. I think it's really important. It's the task we're called to do. It's really, really important. Let's take a step back. All of this outside of God and the Holy Spirit, I'll just say, like, I took that as the understood, assumed thing. I don't want to take that as the understood, assumed thing. God and the Holy Spirit is first and primary in all this. Preaching is an important aspect. I think it's important. But I think living out what you preach is just as important, if not more important. Letting the church see who you are, your character is greater than your competency. Like letting your church see, you say small groups is important. What small group are you in? You say serving is important. Where are you serving? You say missions is important. What mission trip are you going on? Those things speak volumes. And it becomes easier, especially when you get in larger churches, to have that polished sermon and spending 20 to 30 hours preparing and getting ready for it. The sermon that takes 10 hours that is done is better than the sermon that takes 30 hours that is never completed. All right? And so it's just an idea of practicing is greater than preaching, and we need to make sure that we don't lose sight of what we're called to do, and it's preaching, but to make sure we are living it out with our people and walking with them. And so that whatever size church we are in, I think that is a healthy dynamic we need to practice and show for our people. So all that to say, I mentioned some of these resources, but Leadership Pain by Samuel Chan, Canoeing the Mountains by Todd Bolsinger is another great book I've read on adaptive leadership, and he talks about what that looks like. If you've never read the article and where some of these ideas even come from of church dynamics, leadership size, and church size dynamics by Tim Keller, if you Google that, you can find the whole article. It is a great resource, and it talks about how to make changes to, if you feel like God is calling you to become a larger church, what are the things that have to change to make those steps? I would argue, I don't think that every church is called to make that step. I think that's evaluating who are you designed to be, where is God have your church at, and then what does that look like for you to be healthy? So that's not a, let's follow these steps and just get bigger, because bigger is not better, but size does matter. All right, so thank you for your time. It's right at 12 o'clock, and I'm gonna close us in a word of prayer if that's okay. Good? Perfect. All right. Dear Lord, thank you for this time. I thank you for just the opportunity to have conversations, Lord, to consider the dynamics of our church sizes and what you're doing. I pray that you would continue to guide us and lead us, Father, to be who you have called us to be, for our churches to be who they are called to be, and Father, ultimately for us to be healthy and to impact your kingdom and your eternal glory, Father. It's in your Son's name we pray. Amen.